Hey, book besties, we're your hosts, Kelsey.
I'm Mickey.
And this is For the Shelf Podcast.
Before we get started, this podcast is intended for a mature audience and may not be suitable for those under 18. Use of profanity is a definite, along with discussions of mature sexual themes and graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
This week we'll be discussing Powerless by Lauren Roberts, but first, last week's bookish news. So I think everybody in the bookish community has seen, heard, listened to, read. The book description for Onyx Storm was finally released.
Do you want to know who hasn't read the blurb for the book description?
You're kidding.
I don't want to know. I don't want to know anything. I just want to, like, blissfully open it up on release day and just go.
It doesn't... See... That doesn't work out for you very well, because hello, divine rivals.
You know I'm going to like Onyx Storm.
That's true. Yeah, so it doesn't really say very much. Very excited that it came out. The guy, what I thought was really cool is there's a creator on TikTok, and when Fourth Wing and Iron Flame got really popular, he took it upon himself to voice Taryn. And she actually, Rebecca Yarros, used him to narrate the blurb and put it out, which I thought was really cool. So I'm hoping that means that if we get like an audiobook, he's going to be in it and he's going to be the voice of Taryn.
Yeah, because I have heard some of his audio clips and it's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. So super excited. She keeps teasing things on Instagram, and it just makes me want the rest of this year to go by so much faster, so that way I can get the book in my hands and we can read it. Ugh. Why can't it be January?
Right? Although, now I say that I haven't read the description, and I'm going to go into it blind, but, like, last year for Iron Flame, she released, like, you know, 5-minute audio clips beforehand, and then she released, like, a couple pages, teasers, and I read all of those, and I gobbled all of those things up, even though I said I wasn't going to.
Well, she's been doing that. She's been releasing, like, 1 or 2 sentence worth of, like, teasers in Zayden and Violet's point of view that are in Onyx Storm.
Just make me want to know the things.
Yeah. And she's very much pulling a Taylor Swift and doing Easter eggs in some of her Instagram posts. So people are just going nuts for
it. I'm not clever enough for any of that.
Yeah. I love Taylor Swift, but I'm not that big of a Swiftie. I don't do all of that. But yeah, I don't got time for that.
I'm a 0.5% Swiftie.
You like one song.
I do like one song.
Okay, so next up is actually related to the podcast. So Powerless is now in development to become a TV series.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They picked a director and who is producing the show. But that's really all that's come out. I cannot get over the amount of new release books that are already TV and movie adaptations. I mean, Fourth Wing, Powerless.
Butcher and Blackbird.
Yeah, Butcher and Blackbird. I know you don't really read romance books, like rom-coms, but Emily Henry's book, it got picked up and they actually started filming.
See, I love to watch a rom-com. Or like the Hallmark kind of, like, she buys an inn in the country and then falls in love with the guy.
Yeah. But a lot of new release books are being immediately picked up and started production, and we still can't get any confirmation for ACOTAR.
Yeah, come on, Sarah, get off your ass.
So.
Or, like, books that were picked up, like The Night Circus was optioned for a film years and years and years ago, and that just, nobody ever did anything with it.
Yeah, and then
Wasteland, Daughter of Smoke and Bone, like, these are all things that were once picked up, I mean, we're talking, like, a decade ago, and just have never seen anything about it.
Well, Shadow and Bone and Six of Crows got picked up by Netflix, and then they canceled it after, like, 2 or 3 seasons.
Yeah, I think people didn't like it.
I didn't like it because although it's set in the same universe, they meshed everything together. And it's like, it doesn't all happen at the same time. Like, if you're going to do that, don't do it with Six of Crows. Do Shadow and Bone and then King of Scars. Like, that makes more sense. It's all the same characters. It's immediately afterwards. Like, part of it was still at the very, like, it literally picked up at the very end of the war. I don't know. Gonna go on a rant.
I did not read the whole Grishaverse. I loved Six of Crows, Crooked Kingdom. 5-star reads. I didn't even finish the Shadow and Bone trilogy. It was too young adult for me. It was too meh.
I liked it.
I didn't even read the third one, and I haven't read the King of Scars, Rule of Wolves yet.
Yeah. I liked it. I liked all of the books in that series. But yeah, it didn't make sense. I was excited when it got picked up because it was supposed to be just Six of Crows, and then they're like, just kidding, no, it's not. And yeah, so.
Yeah, Six of Crows could have just stood on its own. They didn't need to do it.
For real. Yeah. Okay, so speaking of kind of all of this, you actually sent me this. So ACOTAR Book 6, there was articles that came out that said that it's been pushed to either late 2025 or early 2026. This has not been confirmed by Sarah. It has not been confirmed by Bloomsbury. They never released a date for it. I don't even know if she's even come out and said that it's complete yet.
No, I don't think she has, because I feel like the whole world would know.
Yeah, we don't know any.
And we don't even know if it's Asriel and Elaine or if it's, you know, we don't even know.
So for there to be, and I mean, of course, there's already been so much speculation about it. So given that these articles, and there was multiple that were posted about it, we can't confirm because obviously Sarah and Bloomsbury haven't. It's just something that's floating out there at the moment. And then same thing with the Margot Robbie. So remember when that picture came about and it was Sarah and Margot in the...
Yeah, they had coffee together.
Yeah, so Margot kind of talked about it and how said she told Sarah she was a big fan of this series and she would be down to either direct or produce if Sarah ever wanted to put it, like make it a movie. Because we know like it was picked up and then we know it had the Outlander person, yeah, as the showrunner, and then that kind of fell off and we haven't heard anything else about it, and then there's been so many rumors that it's been shelved. That's also not been confirmed. She didn't even want to release that it was being possibly made into a TV show. Did you see how that got leaked?
her husband
Yeah, so there's so many what ifs. Don't know if it's ever gonna happen. At this point...
The other thing, around that time, you know, around the same time with the Margot Robbie, Sarah lunch date or whatever, Megan Fox was also in the news, like, talking about in multiple interviews. She would hold the ACOTAR or talk about how much she loved the series, and there was all this talk about her playing Amarantha. But again, no confirmation and nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I think any actress, an actor... would absolutely love to be a part of ACOTAR in any way, shape, or form because it's so huge and popular. So, yeah, I mean, I totally get it.
Unless they don't want to devote, like, think about, like, the Game of Thrones actors. I mean, they had to devote, like, a decade of their lives.
Yeah, that's true.
To being part of a series like that, because even if they do one book, one season, which if it becomes as popular as it's going to be, they're going to stretch it out. Maybe they're going to do one book, two seasons. You know, I mean, they're just... committing to such a large chunk of time.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say the same thing about Harry Potter and those actors. And then, of course, that's all they're ever known for. But I don't know. If I had the chance, I would be a part of it.
Oh, me too. Okay. Need a barista for the show, guys?
Hey, Shelf was featured in a movie.
Yes, the mermaid romance movie.
Yeah.
That I have no idea what the name of it is or when it comes out. So that's not helpful to any of you guys. But when I know that information, I'll share it.
Okay, so something else that I saw this morning. Carissa Broadbent teased that she has finished writing the fourth book in the Crowns of Nyaxia series. So that is the second book in the second duology.
Okay.
I know, that's great. It's like, so confusing, but yeah.
I know, and I can't think of the name of the... I don't know, there's... You know, it's like a bowl of mac and cheese. Like, it has a title like that.
Yeah.
But thanks, Carissa. Like, she's just, like, you know, one after another getting them done, and I appreciate that.
And the third book comes out on November 19th, so I'm very excited. Mm-hmm.
Oh, we should have that on our list. Or I'm just pretty sure. For ourselves.
I'm pretty sure it comes out November 19th. I'll have to double-check that, but I'm almost positive it does.
That's so exciting.
I don't know if we have it on our list, because, see, here's the thing. If we put it on our list, we have to do the first two. Because it has Misha in it, and it's a whole thing. I think it's just going to be something that I read. And then, of course, like, she usually does a novella in between each one. So,
which then gets no love and no one ever talks about them other than me. You're welcome, Carissa.
But I'm excited. I think there's three, if I remember correctly, there's three duologies.
Yes, that's what I heard.
In the series. So we're getting close to it being finished, which is sad, but also I'm excited because I love...
it's going to be one of those authors that just writes and writes and writes and keeps going. And we could just look forward to
it. Because in the other bookish news, she said that she was going to be writing another book, but it wasn't focused in this. So,
well, thank you, Carissa, for, you know, dedicating so much of your time to content for us.
Yeah, and hopefully book four comes out before Polycons, and then I can get all, what is that, 6, possibly 7 of Shreds and another novella signed. Okay, and then here we are, yet again, talking about Quicksilver. When is it ever going to end?
It's never going to end because the trad publish date is coming up soon. And then all the people who didn't know about it regularly because they're not like book talk people are just going to go to Barnes & Noble and they're going to pick it up and they're going to love it. And it's just going to be all over the fucking place. And then someone's going to pick it up as a show or a movie and it's going to be a whole fucking thing, Kelsey.
That is one thing I will never watch. If it does, I won't.
I'll watch it.
I won't.
But go on, your news.
Yeah, especially if they leave in century years as one of the lines that they have to say.
Well, at least if they're verbalizing the die has been cast, no one will be able to know that they're using die incorrectly.
No, but I'm sure they'll talk about being, I can't even remember what it was.
Boobs?
A horny bitch in heat with boobs. Yeah. Anyways, Kelly Hart released a bonus chapter in Kingfisher's point of view. It's in her newsletter, so if you want to read it, you have to go subscribe, and then you can read it. I don't know anything about it other than that. I don't know what part of the book it's at and what scene.
If you could see Kelsey's face right now, guys, you would know the disinterest.
I will not be signing up. I will not be reading it. If you would like to, if you loved this book again, I don't know why, but more power to you. I hate having to deliver this news, but Quicksilver still, for some reason, is our number one episode and gets more times
the listens than anything else.
So apparently you guys all like it. Tell me what I'm missing. I really don't know. All right, so that is going to be it for bookish news. Now we're going to jump into the spoiler-free part of our review of Powerless.
All right, guys, so at the time of this recording, the Goodreads rating for Powerless is a 4.21 stars with 397,000 ratings. This book was released in January of 2023. It's the first in the Powerless trilogy, with the final book coming out sometime in 2025. That is so many ratings in a year and a half,
or
2 years. That's insane. You guys showed up for this book and you loved it. It was also nominated for Best Young Adult Fantasy Science Fiction last year, the year it came out, but did lose to Divine Rivals.
Which is wild because Divine Rivals is not a young adult book.
Yeah, and Divine Rivals was not great. So, you can find the book on Kindle. It is not on Kindle Unlimited. I think it is $12. But of course, you can get the audiobook and you can get physical copy basically anywhere books are sold. But don't forget, if you're going to order online from somewhere, to use bookshop.org. And Kelsey, tell us about the special edition.
So special editions that were done. So I remember Bookish Box and Owlcrate did special editions for this. Barnes & Noble has their own edition. It's a Barnes & Noble exclusive. And they did it for the novella and Reckless.
Do we know what makes it special? Like what?
I think it has bonus
chapter.
I think it has, yeah, bonus chapter. And like maybe, I think the dust jacket is different, if I remember correctly. And then Fairy Loot just did their pre-order of the first two books and the novella. So the three that are currently out. And they sold out in early access.
Okay, so the regular people, us regular people, will not get them.
No, they sold out.
Sorry, regular people.
Okay, so now let's get into the description of this book. She is the very thing he spent his whole life hunting. He is the very thing she spent her whole life pretending to be. Only the extraordinary belong in the kingdom of Ilia, the exceptional, the empowered, the elites. The powers these elites have possessed for decades were graciously gifted to them by the plague, though not all were fortunate enough to both survive the sickness and reap the reward. Those born ordinary were just that, ordinary. And when the king decreed that all ordinaries be banished in order to preserve his elite society, lacking the ability suddenly becomes a crime, making Peyton Gray a felon by fate and a thief by necessity. Surviving in the slums as an ordinary is no simple task, and Peyton knows this better than the most. Having been trained by her father to be overly observant since she was a child, Peyton poses as a psychic in the crowded city, blending in with the elites as best she can in order to stay alive and out of trouble. Easier said than done. When Peyton unsuspectingly saves one of the Ilias princes, she finds herself thrown into the purging trials. The brutal competition exists to showcase the elite's powers, the very thing Peyton lacks. If the trials and the opponents within them don't kill her, the prince she's fighting feelings for certainly will if he discovers what she is, completely ordinary.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
That's a mouthful blurb, but I think it really does sum up the book perfectly. It really, had some that were kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I think that one's
pretty spot on.
Point. Yeah. So the genre for this, it's fantasy, young adult, fantasy, romanticy, and then dystopian. Trigger warnings. We have torture off page. Torture also on page, but it's not very graphic.
Right.
So it's a very, very light torture, if you will. Death of a parent off page. Death in general. War. And then I'm going to add in homelessness, because that could be a trigger.
Yeah.
For some.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I would say there is just a couple of times where suicidal thoughts are mentioned, not taken like very seriously. They're kind of almost said in like a cast off kind of way, but it is there.
So, and I would say that like that most of these things, that the trigger warnings are very mild. They're not described graphically. They are there. It is a theme, but I don't think it's going to give you nightmares.
No, because it's again, it's a young adult book, so it's written and described in that way where it's not gory, it's not super graphic.
I would say this is appropriate for all teenagers to read.
Yeah, I would say so. All right, so spice rating. I gave it a 0. It's YA, so there's no spice at all. The book is more about the plot and the fighting attraction than anything else. There's no spicy scenes. I don't even think they kiss.
Yeah, so I also gave it a 0. 0 spice at all. Again, I know it's YA, but we could add like a little spice.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, like, I mean, there could have been, so like you said, they didn't even kiss, but like maybe they kind of sort of did, because at one point they're talking about how like he whispers his lips across her lips. And I'm like, did they just kiss? I don't know. Like, it was unclear.
Yeah.
But, you know, but they could have kissed. We didn't need to go 500 pages of them, like, yearning for each other without even a kiss. Like, yeah. I don't know. It was a little too chaste, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah. Again, it's
for the amount. I mean, there was plot. There was a lot of plot. But a lot of the plot was the buildup of this relationship between these two. And to have them not really have any physical contact like that, it just kind of, I don't know. It didn't really fit.
Yeah, but at the same time, I can kind of see it, because she more so is fighting her attraction to him, which we'll get into exactly why in the spoiler part, but it makes sense. Like, she could have easily given in, and I'm sure something would have happened, but given her circumstance, and like, of course, because she's ordinary and he can't know that, she was like fighting.
One kiss wouldn't have killed anybody.
No, but I guess I could see it. Moving into our sweet Pino, I gave it a 3. Kai was very clearly in love with her, and he kept like saving her, and you could tell like that romance was building between the two of them and in their moments, and he was always like protecting her, and you know, he even went as far as to put himself on the bad side of his dad and like let her kind of shine more than him, and the trial's supposed to be more about him than her, obviously. So like it was very clear he was very in love with her. Again, on her side, she's trying to fight it, but she can't help but like grow close to him and want to be with him and have those conflicting feelings. So I gave it a 3.
And I totally agree with you. I also gave it a 3 for, you know, Sweet Pea, Sweet Peppers. And for Kai, for his just absolute mental undoing. Like, he is basically driving himself kind of crazy with how much he, like, wants her.
Yeah.
And I loved that, to the point where he was almost, like, a little bit unhinged and didn't really know, you know, what to do with these, like, feelings that he was having. And I thought that was great. I just thought that he was really, like, at least his internal monologue, he was so feral for her.
Yeah.
He wanted to touch her. He wanted to be around her. Like, you could just, like, feel that he, like, so desperately wanted to be in her orbit.
Yeah, which was so different from him, because, like, his role in society is to not care and not have feelings in order for him to do his job. And she just came in and just fucked that all up for him. And he was like, okay, yeah, I mean, I guess, whatever. Like,
also, he braids her hair.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. No man has ever been like, let me braid your hair, honey.
Yeah.
So.
And like, he always.
Out there, you should braid my hair.
And he always makes sure that she's fed, because he knows that she's not used to always having food readily available. And he catches on to that. And like, her hesitation to eat it because she feels bad about all the people back in Loot. And he just like piles her plate up and like feeds her and stuff and convinces her to eat. Yeah.
Yeah, it's cute.
I like
his
him.
He's a little daddy.
Yeah. All right. Favorite time of the podcast.
My favorite time of the podcast, we have our small report. Our small report is not that exciting this week. Kai smells like, and I quote, pine and rain and sweat.
I have a bone to pick with every single romantic-y author.
Is it about pine?
Yes.
There's only one. There's only one prince that smells like pine.
No, no, no. Why does every single main male character smell like pine or evergreen or the forest or crisp air? Why? Why can't they smell like something else? Every single one of them. Somewhere in there smells like a tree. And it bothers me.
So it makes me wonder. So I guess if your significant other does not smell like pine, are they really your significant other?
I don't get it. I don't get it.
No, I'm with you. I'm sorry. All I think about when they say pine is Rowan. Rowan smells like pine. Rowan,
yeah, because it's a romantasy book. So of course it's going to smell like pine.
Rowan was the first to smell like pine.
It just, it clicked in my brain in this book that I started tracking it, because Lorien smells like that. Someone
Kingfisher smells like evergreen, like, or pine or something.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. And then in the next book, there's...
Do not ruin the smell report for the next book.
Okay, fine. Anyways, there's a pattern. There's a pattern, and it makes me angry. All right, anyways.
Anyway, yeah, pine and rain and sweat.
Continue.
That's it. That's the whole smell report this week.
She doesn't have a scent?
No.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I don't think I...
I don't think...
I mean, she would smell like the streets, I guess.
She would smell nasty. Yeah, she's like, was homeless and lived in the quote-unquote garbage pile.
Yeah.
You know, there might have been a smell report, guys, but I did not read this on my Kindle. I read it on the physical book, and I tried to take notes. I may have shit the bed on this one, but I don't think so.
No, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think she does. All right, let's get into tropes. So the tropes are touch her and die, enemies to lovers. It's a slow burn for sure. And of course, a forbidden love, forbidden romance.
So I'm adding that he falls first.
Yeah.
I think he definitely falls first.
Yeah.
You know, who did this to you? We have a duel, who did this to you, where they're kind of back and forth. And he's like, hey, who did this to you? And she's like, oh, wait, who did this to you?
Yeah.
I thought that scene was really cute. We do have a one horse situation It is a literal throwaway line where they get on one horse together. There's nothing talked about. There's no boner. There's no the feel of her in front of him. It's just like they both got on the horse and they rode away. So they did one horse gone wrong.
Well, it's YA, so of course they're not going to go into detail.
But if you're going to go on one horse, like, let's talk about it. Like, let's have some feelings. I feel very strongly about one horse, and I will fucking die on this hill.
I guess you could also say that there's a potential love triangle.
True.
Because of the other brother? Yeah. The other prince?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Potential love triangle.
Potential. Okay, so let's get into the plot and characterization of the book. So Peyton, I like her. I loved her character. You know, she is extremely tough. She doesn't. So in the beginning of the book, she's homeless and she lives on the streets and she has to become a master thief in order to survive. But she doesn't start off that way. So it talks about how she was taught by her dad. Her dad unfortunately dies and then she becomes homeless. And then, you know, she goes through this growth and, yeah, she accidentally saves a prince and then she gets thrown into the trials and she has to pretend to be an elite when she's not. And yeah, basically,
she's born ordinary.
Yeah.
And I love that she's ordinary, but at no point is she ever powerless.
Right.
She is, like you said, a total badass.
Yeah. And I like how the book details how she uses her quote unquote ability and the way that she's able to pick up on that stuff kind of on the fly. And she's extremely smart and intelligent. She's
clever and
yeah. And I really liked her. And you can only assume because it's a YA, she's young in the book. We don't ever find out exactly her age. But yeah, for her to be able to do all of that and survive
and not be hopeless and despondent, she seems like pretty plucky, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And then, yeah, to be able to like accidentally infiltrate the Royal Society, I thought. And then like she does some other things that we'll talk about later that it just really proves that she doesn't really give a shit about what other people say about her, and she's just gonna be her, and I love that.
And then we have Kai. Kai is the younger prince. He's the one that's gonna grow up to be the future enforcer. So the enforcer being, like, head assassin slash, like...
like, head of the army.
Yeah, like, yeah. The main general, or the killer. Like, the head killer in charge. He's morally gray. I know, Kelsey, you have something to say about that.
Yeah, so I do love... so he is taught from a very young age that he is going to be the enforcer, and he's taught how to torture and kill with no feelings. But he still is able to keep his morals. And his one thing is, even though it's technically treason, he doesn't kill kids. He won't kill kids.
Right. Still holds on to his humanity in that aspect.
Yeah, because so with the ordinaries, I know it says banish them, but in the book, I think that's the only thing that's different. So in the book, they're killed. And if he finds out the ordinary that he's been sent to kill is a child, he doesn't kill them. He like sends them onto the sands with the people who harbored him, like exile or whatever.
Right.
And yeah, he doesn't kill them.
And he also has very close relationships with other characters in the book. You know, for someone who's been, quote unquote, trained to kill his entire life, like, he clearly loves his brother so much.
Yeah.
And then, like, his, like, adopted...
Little brother.
And, you know, a few other characters. So he's not heartless.
Right.
Despite the fact that he's been, you know, trained his whole life to be heartless. Also, he's 19.
Yes. So Kit, we know is 19. No, Kai is 19. Kit is the older brother. We don't know exactly how much older he is. They're stepbrothers. They have different moms.
Right. And Kit's mom is dead.
Yes. She died
and Kai's mom is.
I think she died in childbirth.
Something like that.
Yeah. Kit is a daddy's boy for sure. So he's the one, he's the oldest one, so he's going to eventually become king when his dad dies. So he's a daddy's boy, 100%. I guess maybe because you're not supposed to really get enveloped in his character, at least in this book, I didn't really care for him.
Yeah, I wrote here, wet paper towel. Like that.
Yeah.
He kind of had no personality of his own. And, you know, even his brother's like, hey, you better start thinking for yourself. And
yeah, even Peyton says that.
And yeah, he just, I don't know, he brought nothing to the table for me other than he's the heir and he's going to be the king.
Yeah, he's all about doing whatever his dad wants. And it's very clear in the book, his dad is not a good guy. I mean, he's having his own subjects murdered because they don't have powers, you know. So, yeah, I didn't really care for him. I guess maybe you're not supposed to in this book, but I don't know.
I don't know. So here's where we're going to talk about one of my issues with the book. So we know that Kai is 19. We don't have an age for the other two. I don't really know why this book is young adult or had to be written as a young adult story with them being 19 or over. It just didn't seem... Kai's character just did not seem realistic to me as a 19-year-old person.
Yeah.
You know, he's been being sent on, quote, missions for his whole life where he's going and killing people. And I'm not a trained assassin. But I just don't know, like, when did they start assassin training him? Like, at 5 years old?
I believe when he was really young. So
it just doesn't seem likely that a 19-year-old would have the experience, like, the worldliness to go and be the enforcer and do the things that he has to do.
Yeah.
I think she could have easily aged up these characters. You know, she did, and not that she had to, like, change the writing style or anything, but it just would have been more believable, in my opinion.
Yeah, especially because, and I don't know if we want to talk about it here, but we know the exact age he was when he killed his first person.
Mm-hmm. We can talk about that at the end.
Okay.
And I just also, and kind of going back with the jalapeno rating, there was so much, you know, we talked about like the yearning and the, you know, the proximity to each other and all the feelings and stuff. It just seemed like she really easily could have slid in a little bit of spice to make it. Not young adult.
Yeah.
And it would have fit in perfectly. Like, I would like to see her write a spicy version of this.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I don't think it would detract from the story at all.
No, I definitely think there's been a few books that we've read recently, Divine Rivals being one of them, which technically is not a young adult book, but gets thrown into young adult because it's not necessarily a full adult book. And like we talked about earlier, the new adult genre. It's a genre, it exists. However, for some reason, it's not utilized properly.
Yeah, it's not like you can go into Barnes & Noble and go to the new adult section.
But so many of these books fall into that. This book falls into that. Divine Rivals falls into that. Like, there's so many that they need to embrace that genre and go with it. Because I think it could open up stuff for them. If they aren't comfortable as writers, now, granted, Lauren Roberts is 21.
Which is impressive as fuck, Lauren Roberts. Yeah. Like,
so if she's not comfortable writing full-on spicy scenes, that's fine. But it seems with her writing and the way that she wants to tell the story, it's not exactly young adult. So I feel like they're right, being hindered.
Think about what is the point of young adult literature in the sense of, like, usually you've got, like, a coming-of-age story and you're watching this character maybe... you know, a character grow into their powers or, you know, age up, grow into themselves and mature and whatnot. Or you're trying to relate to that age group.
Right.
Create a nostalgia for that age. And this book doesn't do any of that.
Right.
You know what I mean? So what is the point of it being in the young adult genre other than being an entertaining fantasy story for young adults? Question mark. But also the characters are not young adults.
Right. Yeah, it's totally the new adult genre. I just wish more books would embrace that and go to their publishers and be like, listen, this is a new adult book. I want to write it like a new adult book. I don't want to be hindered with the young adult category and how I'm supposed to write for young adults, but I'm also not ready to jump straight into romantasy fantasy land. And I think it's just the perfect spot for these writers. And I just don't understand why it's not being utilized.
Yeah. So come on, publishers. Let's do that. Let's start printing new adult instead of young adult.
Yeah, for real.
On the back of your books.
Okay, so moving into the plot. One thing that I loved about this book is we didn't have to go through a training montage. So this book has obviously a trial in it. And 9 times out of 10, when you have a book that has some sort of trial or competition, there's always like a 4-chapter-long training montage because she gets thrown into the trial and she has no idea how to fight, and they have to teach her. We didn't have that, and I loved that. I love that
she came preloaded with her.
I love that we skipped that. I mean, you get like scenes where she's training, but
because you have to have the angsty scenes where they're, you know, train fighting together.
Yeah.
And they're pinning each other on the mat.
But they keep up with each other.
They do.
And they land basically blow for blow. And yeah, I love that we didn't have to go through that training montage.
So funny anecdote to that. I did a combination of audiobook and physical book for this because I was like really desperately trying to read it. And when we were getting close to the deadline, I was driving Parker to school. I'm like, Parker, I'm going to put my audiobook on the way to school. Like, shut up. Like, we're going to do this. And it was the scene of them training. And of course, it's like the scene where it's like she pins him with her thighs on the mat. And then he pushes her off and he pins her hands above her head. And even Parker was like, this is so stupid. This is so stupid. So,
yeah,
just so you know, the actual teenager listening to it thought that that was stupid.
Yeah. I also liked how she described the world, you know, the big difference between Loot, which is the slums, and the way that operates almost like it's its own little city. And then, of course, you have like the nobility and the castle and the royals and all of that. And then, of course, like there's the breakdown of the powers, which took me a minute, I will say. It took me a minute to get a hang of it and what that is and the purge, or no, not the purge, the plague. And then, like, I'm still a little iffy on the timeline because it was written well, but it wasn't completely flushed out, I think.
Yeah, and I have some questions that I want to get to in the spoiler review for you about a little bit more about the plague and the purge.
Yeah, I think I would have definitely liked a prologue in this book that talked about the plague, then going into, because I don't even know how many years, really.
30.
Okay, so 30. And then now there's 6 years. This would be the 6th year of the trial.
Yeah, because every 5 years since the purge / plague.
Plague. There's the purging trials.
Okay, so, but I thought like it was to commemorate Purge.
What I'm saying.
Okay, like, so we have questions.
Yeah, we have questions.
But yeah, so every 5 years they do these trials.
Yeah, because was it 30 years from the time that the king banned ordinaries?
Which is the Purge.
Okay. Yeah. But I don't know how. Questions. All right.
Okay, moving on.
So
we're going to talk a little bit about the elite structure. So if you have powers, you are considered an elite. We have all different tiers. We have the offensive elites, which are usually our nobility, or like the more like kick-ass physical powers. We have the defensive elites, and then we have the mundanes, which are like the passive powers, like the psychic abilities.
Yeah, the illusionist and, typically all of that.
Right. And then we have our ordinaries, which are powerless, which are, you know, the banished and or killed. And then we have fatals, which are
also banished and killed.
Right. Except that the king keeps one of each power as, like, you know, in his, like, repertoire of
cards. So, like, protect him. So the fatals are, like the silencers who can shut down your power and your mind. And then there's, I think, also like a mind reader, or I can't remember, something like that. Also, because it just popped in my brain, remember how I had that rant about the maps in the books?
Yes.
this one did it, and it pissed me off. Because, again, this is why you need to have maps that can be removed, like a tear-out version of the map that's just specifically supposed to be torn out.
Up, my face immediately puckers up. And listen. It's like the worst thing that you could suggest. Do not put tear-out maps in your books.
Okay, do you see what you can't read and what you can't visualize? Loot! Where she's from, where some of this story takes place, it's in the middle of the freaking
crease,
and you can't see it. You can't even see the castle or the ball. You can't see anything.
Yeah, you could see the entire freaking ocean with its sea monster ass sticking out, but loot the city where you know, a lot of this takes place, nope.
Yeah, this is why I say that. Or make it one page. So yeah, you can see everything. This annoys the ever-loving shit out of me. I opened this book and said, I don't even want to read it. I can't see the map. I don't know why they do this all the time. Why is always the most important parts of the map in the middle?
Yeah, this is really poor thought planning on the cartographers here. So, guys, can we normalize fixing the map so that Kelsey doesn't have to have, like, an embolism?
Anyways.
But again, no publishers. Do not listen to Kelsey about the tear-out map, because you know what's going to happen? People are going to tear out the map, and then it's going to get lost, and then it's going to come into the used bookstore without the map, and people are going to be like, well, why is the map not there? And
okay.
It's going to decrease the value of the fucking book.
Fine.
For the resale market, and I'm just going to be like, and then when you list things online, you're going to have to be like, map not included.
That's true. That is kind of annoying, you know? When I have to do that.
Think about that. Think about your job, Kelsey.
Okay, well, fine. Can we at least make a printable version on the author's website?
It's called make a photocopy.
How? I can't even see the middle of it. I love my God.
Anyways. Oh, you know, we didn't mention any side characters. There are side characters.
There are
side characters. I don't think we really need to go into all that much detail. They're kind of generic. I don't think any of them are really super important. They're just kind of there.
So,
kind of there to move the plot along. Other than she has a best friend. She has a cute little best friend, Adina.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the only character that we really care about.
Yeah. During the Pershing Trials, there's 9 people that are chosen. So they have to apply to be in the trials. And then you have to be chosen. And so there's 9 of them that get chosen for the trials. The most important ones are, Peyton and Kai. And then Jax, who is the the adopted brother of Kai. Those are like the main important ones from the trials. This is being the 6th one, which they say in the book is completely different from all the other ones because Kai is participating and he's the future enforcer.
Right. And the reason being is because the enforcer has to give like an extreme show of power in order to be like accepted by the people or to like become the enforcer.
It's to be accepted. Like, yeah. And so in the trials, there's 3 trials. They each take place, I think, once a month, I want to say, or once like every 2 weeks or
situation.
Yeah. And then there's usually a ball before the trial. And then I think the biggest thing that was different from most like trials and competitions that we see in romantasy books or fantasy books is in this one, they have to not only like survive and win the trial, but they also have to have the like popular vote, like the people get to vote. And so they like parade themselves around and have interviews in front of all of the citizens. And then the citizens get to cast their vote on who they like the most, which I thought was different.
I thought it was different too. And I want to circle back around to that in the spoiler version, because I have questions.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I would say the only time I've ever seen that is actually in the last book in the High Mountain Court series, The Amethyst Kingdom. And that's like how
have trials.
Uh-huh. Yeah, in the last one.
I book 2. I mean,
that's probably for the best. I read all 5 of them, and I absolutely hated the last one, and that was the one I was looking forward to the most. Yeah, it was very sad because it was the final one, and
she's got a queer romantasy out right now, which is kind of climbing the charts in popularity. I keep seeing it all over. Don't ask me what it's called.
But High Mountain Court is. Oh, I know what you're. Golden, I have it. A River of Golden something.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful cover.
Yeah. But book 2 and book 3. No, book 3 and book 4 of High Mountain Court are queer.
Yeah, there's a non-binary character, which is the center point of book four, which is really awesome.
Yeah.
We don't get to see that enough, I think, enough queer rep
Yeah.
in our fantasy books, and that's lesbians for book three.
Yep. Yep. But book five is about Carrie's, and there's the trial to win like the Eastern Crown, and then they do that. They have like the,
Look at them.
yeah, it's probably for the
There's too
best.
many books in this world.
But okay, anyway, so yeah, that's the only other time I've ever seen that where the citizens get like to vote.
I want to say maybe Trials of the Sun Queen
I haven't read
had
that yet.
like a, you don't need to. It's I think it's kind of like a bachelor sort of like, I don't know, like vote people off kind of thing. If I remember
Oh.
correctly, please don't quote me directly
Like
on that. I read
Survivor?
it maybe, like I've read it so long
I know
ago.
it obviously it has involves
But
trials, obviously.
I mean, that's the whole point. But I feel like it was something similar, like you got cast off based on popularity.
Yeah.
But again, don't quote me on that. If you've read it, don't be like, well, Nikki, actually, you're really fucking wrong.
All right, let's get into our ratings. I gave it 4 stars. I actually really enjoyed this book. I liked how the characters were fleshed out, except for Kit, which I think was done intentional. I liked how interesting the trials were. I just thought it was kind of like a well-rounded book for it being, quote unquote YA and in the first book. And I think honestly, I gave it such a high rating because she's 21.
Yeah, that's awesome. We cannot deny like how fucking awesome that is at
Yeah.
21 to write this book.
Yeah. So I definitely understand the hype of this book. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. It checked all the boxes for me. It was a very easy read, and it flowed really well for me.
So,
I knew it was coming. I
I
knew it
don't
was
even know.
coming.
I don't even know. Okay. So this book, actually, the copy that I have created a very weird time warp where I would open this book and I would read it and I would sit and I would read and read and read and the page count would not get any smaller. And this book went on forever, forever and ever. It took me 2 weeks to get through it. I could not get invested. I could not focus on it to the point where, like, I was literally racing to finish it, literally, audiobook in the car, physical book at home, audiobook in the car, like dashing back and forth.
I know, and you had an extra week because of the hurricane.
Yeah, and I had an extra week, and I literally, again, my entire hurricane day, I had to sit down and I was like, I cannot leave my bedroom or like cannot do another
I
task
mean, you
unless I
couldn't
finish
anyways. It was 80 miles
this.
an hour winds
It's
outside.
not like I could go anywhere, but like, I had to like literally sit and force myself and be like, you are not getting out of this hurricane without finishing this book. And I think partially, and I don't want to say it was the book, but I did have a huge book hangover.
You did.
I loved Broken Bonds, which was my physical read right before this. And then my audiobook right before this was the last book in the Stephanie Garber, the Once Upon a Broken Heart series. And I fucking loved that book. So it was just like the tragedy of both of them ending and then having to pick up this young adult, no spice book. Anyway, this is a really long-winded way for me to say that I gave this book 2 stars. But I think it deserves more stars than that. I think it's me. I don't think it's the book.
I
I
said
genuinely,
that.
I think that the book probably deserves, like, I think it's worth the hype. And I think if you like young adult, I think you'll really like this book. I think it's well written. I think it's interesting. I don't know. I think it's just me.
And
And
I did say that. So I will give you the benefit of the doubt. I did say that had you read this before Broken Bonds, it probably would have been a different situation for you. But coming off of Broken Bonds, yeah, I can see because you loved that. I mean, I did too. I loved Broken
yeah.
Bonds. I immediately went into the second book, which it got edited out, but I did spoil part of the second book in the
Yeah,
first.
I told you because you did that also for Cordis Cruel and Lovely, which we
Yeah.
had to go and edit out.
Yeah.
So you're not allowed to read ahead
I
anymore.
know, I know. I won't. But yeah, so I think had we read this book at a different time, it like if we would have read this after the ritual instead
I
of
would have given
Divine
you 15 stars.
Yeah, but instead of Divine Rivals, I think you would have enjoyed it better.
So, reviews are subjective.
Yeah. All right, so it's for my shelf. I mean, obviously I have a copy of it. I have Reckless. I don't have Powerful, which is the novella, which is about Adina, that side character.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not going to be for my shelf. I'm going to bring the copy to the shop to sit.
sad. I liked it.
And I do also have Reckless, so I'll be bringing them together. So if you're in the area and you need a copy of both books, they will be available.
There you go. All right, guys. So thank you so much. That is our spoiler-free part of our review of Powerless by Lauren Roberts. Join us next week as we discuss Fear the Flames by Olivia Rose Darling. We are going to go ahead and jump into the spoiler part of this review. So if you are interested in reading this book and haven't done so already, this is your time to jump off. Unless you like things spoiled for you, and then feel free to stay. But also don't forget to follow us on social media for any extra content at For the Shelf Podcast.
Because we are going to have some cool content coming up. We've got some things in the works.
Yes, especially on our TikTok. We're going to post actual videos.
Yes, we're going to break the...
We're going to
show our faces and our mouths and do the talking.
Yep. All right, guys. So moving into the spoiler part.
Yes, come backstage. Thanks for joining.
Okay, so the biggest thing, and I didn't know where to put this in the spoiler-free, and I think it's better left in the spoiler part so we can kind of discuss things, the comparison to Red Queen. So there was all that drama a couple of months ago where they were basically saying that this was plagiarizing Red Queen. I will say there are some similarities. There's obviously a trial. There's like...
Brotherly love triangle.
There's a resistance.
Right. There's kind of growing up poor and without in the slums. Although in Red Queen, she still had a family and she had a home and stuff.
Yeah. And as far as I can tell, that's about where the similarities end.
Yeah. I think this is a different flavor.
Yeah.
In Red Queen. I do not see the plagiarism comparison.
No. In Red Queen, it was a marriage competition. She had powers. And she, like, the ending, which I'm assuming if you're here, you already know, at the ending when the king is killed, it was blamed on the older brother, who is the actual love interest in Red Queen, whereas in this one, it's the younger brother. And the younger brother in Red Queen ended up being the villain and not the good guy. And it's, I don't know, because we don't know about Kit yet, but... I don't think
it's similar enough to have merited all of that bullshit that went on.
No, it's definitely, if you liked Red Queen, you would like this book. Absolutely. Yes.
And again, as we say, I mean, it's all been done before, guys. It's all tropes. It's all repetition. This is nothing new. We're not redefining any genres here.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. No. So I don't think it was plagiarized. I think that was very far-fetched. It's similar in the sense that, yeah, I mean, it's a love triangle that also has a competition, and that's about it.
Fair. Okay, so I have a question.
Yeah.
About the trials. Now, do the people choose Peyton to be in the trial because, like, the handful of people witness her saving Prince Kai?
Yes.
Okay, so then what is the point of the people, other than the people choosing who go to the trial, what is the point of parading them around in front of the people to vote and like them when at the end you had to win the trial by killing Adina? You know what I mean? It was like no point. It was like, what was even
because I think again in the last 5 years, now they don't go into detail, but I think in the last 5 years it was a mixture of like the final trial wasn't a you do this and you win. It was like you won the trial, but then like, or you completed the trial and then it was left to the people to vote the winner.
Oh, okay.
But so because
anyone maybe who completed the trial could then be chosen.
But from what I got out of the book is obviously we know that this year was different because of Kai. And then of course, because the king knew about Peyton, knew everything about her, hated her, he set that up with Adina. Like, on purpose.
Right. Now, Adina didn't actually do anything
wrong. No, no.
Right? She had no crimes committed. He just plucked her up and was like, I'm gonna kill this girl to fuck with Peyton.
He said, he told Peyton, like, you're gonna lose the trial no matter what. Because he knew if she came into that circle first, she was never gonna kill her. Which, obviously, she didn't. And then Blair the bitch.
I don't think Kai would have killed her either.
No.
I don't think he would have.
No. But he set that up specifically to make Peyton fail. because the people were, she was gaining popularity with the people of being, like, the silver savior or whatever. And, like, she was doing all, like, the fuck you to the kings, especially when, like, all the balls and she wouldn't wear green, which was, like, the color. And it was, like, you're supposed to, but it wasn't mandatory, but it was basically, like, an unspoken rule. You're supposed to wear green to the ball. It was, like,
being patriotic.
Yeah.
You know, just, like, her response was supposed to be, like, I'm basically doing this for kingdom and country and for myself.
Yeah.
You know, it was, like, the mantra of the people, and they were saying that's why they were in the trials, and she was, you know, kind of, you know,
shit. He said, I expect to survive. Right. Yeah.
She said something else, you know, something.
Yeah.
Just showing that she was not really aligned with the ideals of the kingdom.
Yeah.
And she flaunted that, for sure.
Yeah. And I was very upset that Adina died. I did not see that coming. Now, again, something that's, you know, pretty standard in a lot of these books is, like, the person who has, like, a really close, you know, either brother or sister or friend, like she does. And I even said it to you when we were starting the book. That's what, like, kickstarts the whole thing, is they die a tragic death. And Adina didn't at the beginning. And I was like, oh, thank God. Like, this isn't one of those, like,
compared it to, you know, when the moon happened.
Yeah. Yeah, and how Rave, like, went on her thing because her friend died. And I was like, oh, thank God it's not one of those, like, I'm a revenge trial to murder the king because of, which, I mean, it was, but not because of her friend, but because of her dad.
Right.
And then for her to die at the end like that, I was so sad because
You know what, though? You know what I'm thinking about was how Adina was like, make sure you wear the vest. Make sure you wear the vest. And I'm wondering, like, if there's, like, some secret information.
Or, maybe.
Like, something, like, important in the vest, and it wasn't just, like, at face value. My first thought was, like, okay, maybe Adina really was a criminal, and she knew something secret or about the resistance, and then maybe there was this information in the vest. But I think...
which, again,
just getting ahead of myself.
Could possibly be, and we could find out, because the novella is her story. So, right. Which is why I was also very shocked that she died, because I knew the novella was about her. And I was like, why would you write a novella about a character that dies? So, yeah, that was very sad. I did not see that coming.
Well, Twilight did that with the second life of Bree Tanner.
I don't know if I read that.
Oh, well, yeah, there's, you know who Bree Tanner was? She was like the vampire at the end of Breaking Dawn that they were going to like bring into the fold, like the little young one. And then the Volturi make the Cullens kill her. Or somebody kills her. I don't know.
You know how long that was? Oh, is that the Life and Death one?
No, Life and Death is the gender bent version of Twilight.
Oh, I have all of them. I haven't read it.
Know an unexpected amount of shit about the Twilight franchise.
I read them when I was young, and I haven't picked them up since. I bought Midnight Sun, and I won't read it because I don't want to crush the version of Twilight I have from when I was 12.
I liked Midnight Sun, and you know what? I will say, and I think this is an unpopular opinion, I enjoyed Life and Death more so than the original Twilight. So, I know this is a review of Powerless, guys, but hold on for a second.
Yeah,
so,
I mean...
we do a gender bent, so it's the, I don't know, so that the vampire is the female and the human is the male. And everything is different, and the ending is different, and I like the ending better.
Okay. I'll give you that, because you know what I like better than the original? I like the fanfic of Draco and Hermione.
More than that really sad one that
I've manacled? Oh my god, destroyed my life.
I did not read that. And I think it's pulled off AO3 now, right? Because she's getting trad published.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so some trad publisher picked up Manacled and it's being reworked.
You know what?
To be published.
I have collector's editions and indie prints and things of books. But when I tell you, when the only thing on my, like, desperately in search of list, it's one book and it's Manacled, because you can't buy it anywhere. It's illegal to buy it because
right.
It's fanfic. So the only way you can get it is if somebody gifts it to you and it has been...
you can bind your own.
Or you can bind your own, which
so you
I have
to get permission, but it might not, like I said, it might not
be... I have no idea how to bind books.
Phoebe can do it for you.
Listen.
Phoebe binds her own fan fiction.
That's the only thing on my list. Phoebe, if you want to buy me a Christmas present, or not buy me, if you want to give me a Christmas present, I'll take a copy of Manacled. I don't know what that has... to this day has a chokehold on me. Loved it better than any of the Harry Potter books. Anyways, okay, back to our review.
Yeah, back to our review of Powerless and not Twilight and fan fiction. Okay, so after Adina.
So the reveal.
Yeah. Let's talk about this. I have questions.
Okay, so this whole book.
Or I have statements.
This whole book, she is. One, she actually doesn't know anything about the resistance until they attack the ball. She didn't know it was a thing. But her whole reasoning for hating the king and the fact that she won't look Kit in the eye for the longest time because he has the same green eyes as his dad is because she saw the king kill her dad when she was 13.
We don't know how old, but
I'm pretty sure she, I think she was 13 when that happened.
Oh, okay. So then she's 18.
I don't remember.
Anyhow.
But, and so she knows that the king killed her dad, like in his chair or whatever, came in his house and stabbed him. And so she hated the king. And right. So that's why she does all of the things.
So I have questions about this. I'm going to interrupt you right there. It seems A, unlikely to me. Like, how do the peasants know what the king looks like? Like, in what situation would the peasants living in Loot be around the king enough to recognize his facial features to know what he looks like? I just find that unrealistic.
I'm sure he makes it a point to be seen. You know, obviously, because, like, obviously there's the trials, right?
Right.
And so at some point, I'm sure.
Regular peasant people are at the trials. I think it's, like, the nobles that are watching.
I would think that they would be at the trials because they know the nobles would be there and that would be a way for them to, like, make money. You know, giving their, like, trades and, like, Adina, for example, she was a seamstress and she would make stuff and then she could sell it to the nobles. Or Adina, for example, who, not Adina, Payden, for example, who was a thief. Like, that would be, like, prime time for her to go thieving is during the trial. So,
yes, I don't know.
I mean, but, and I'm sure other people would, you know, make it a point to go if there was, like, a parade or something. And
yeah, I guess. Okay.
Yeah.
That does make sense. So then, obviously, the big reveal is that she realizes that it was not the king that killed her father, that it was Kai.
Yeah. Which now, the king tells her it was Kai.
Right. And she's like, okay. And then her mind all of a sudden, like, recreates the scene. And she's like, that makes sense. But why, like, how did she get from here to here? So how did she get from, hey, a 14-year-old boy has just run my father through with gray eyes and dark hair and morph it into a 40-year-old man with a tall 40-year-old man with green eyes? And
probably because she could not imagine herself killing an adult at that age. And so the trauma of that is, like, the only logical reasoning is an adult.
I guess. I just think that...
It's a plot hole. It's a plot hole, for sure.
You know, done that in a better... Revealed that in a better way, done that in a better way, made it more believable. I don't know.
Yeah. Which, I mean, we, of course, find out that he was 14, and that was his first kill because of the bonus chapter at the end of the book is him doing that.
So do you think that Kai will realize that... That it was her, you know, because he lets her go, right? He's still got all those feelings, and he's fucking mad. He's like, you stabbed my daddy, you bitch, but I'm not going to kill you because I got all these feelings, and he lets her go.
Yeah, and he says to her, like,
run,
because the next time I see you, hopefully I won't be a coward or whatever, because he can't kill her.
Right. So, I don't know. If he realizes it and then realizes why she did that, maybe he's going to feel differently. I don't know. I really wanted Kai to run away with her. I wanted him to somehow be like, I don't know. Like,
that would be too much like Red Queen.
Yeah, I know. But, like, that's what I wanted. I'm just saying. Like,
yeah.
If he was secret resistance, or if he was like, you know, my love for you is stronger than this, and I'm just going to forsake my job of killing innocent people for my whole life. Well, I'll just run away with you, babe.
Because I don't think he's still firmly in the mindset that the ordinaries cause that sickness. So The ordinaries, supposedly, the reason why the king wants to get rid of them is because they cause the elites to lose their power over time if they're in their presence. So I think he firmly believes that because he's... The only time he's ever been around an ordinary is when he's killing them. So, like, he doesn't know. And of course, we know it's bullshit because Peyton isn't ordinary and right. nothing happens to any of the elites that she's next to.
Well, someone's going to have to realize that because once now the boys, the princes, you know, they're going to have to realize that this resistance has been going on for years and years and years. And these people have been hiding in the kingdom for decades and haven't, you know, decreased anyone's power. Someone's going to have to make that correlation.
What I really want to know and what I'm really curious as to is if they now know that she is ordinary, because
he knows, doesn't he?
I don't know, because the king is the one who says it, like, to her when they're like fighting each other. But then there's the one, I don't remember what they're called, but the one who like records it and then plays it out. So they caught some part of that, whether they caught the whole thing or they caught just part of it. They caught that battle between the two of them. So I'm assuming they would eventually go and play that back to Kai and Kit, especially Kit. So I wonder if they now know that she's just straight up ordinary.
Yeah.
And that's going to change their opinions because they spent months with her.
Yeah, but you know what? Even if the site plays back that battle, then they'll know that the king said, like, hey, I sent my son to kill your dad.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Then I think Kai's going to have some more feelings.
Yeah, which then brings me to another point. So we know Kit absolutely loved his dad. We know Kai didn't because his dad was the one who tortured him. Do we think Kit is going to turn evil now?
Well, I think he already was. I think he's already starting to.
I don't think he was evil. I think he was just naive. And he just thought that his dad walked on water and could do no wrong.
No, but I mean, I think there was a definite change in him once his dad died and he, you know, kind of took on the mantle. Because just the way Kai was, like, describing his physical
appearance. Yeah.
And he was like, go and kill her. Like, go and do what you were made to
no,
do.
No, he wants Kit to bring her to him. Kai. Okay. Kit wants Kai. I hate that their names are similar. Kit wants Kai, he says, bring me Peyton Gray.
Yeah, I think he's going to turn evil. I do.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Okay, so we know at the very end, the resistance. So she figures out what the resistance is because they attack the ball. And then she asks Kit about it, and Kit tells her. So then...
Oh, yeah, at that point, I thought that Kit was going to be evil the whole time. And because, remember there was that one point where he burns her?
On accident.
Yeah, but I was like, maybe it really wasn't on accident.
No, I think it was. Because he immediately is like, oh my God.
Be more sinister than it was. But everyone had, like, motives and intents were really just, like, kind of all on display. But
yeah.
It was really, I had a whole bunch of intrigue in the back of my head. I was like, but what if it was this?
Yeah, no, because he immediately is like, oh, I'm so sorry. Because he's a flame, so he doesn't know. Like, he's immune to his own fire. So he doesn't know that he was, like, hot. So. Yeah, I don't think he did it on purpose. But so he confirms the resistance, and then she sees the kid that she pickpocketed and stole that thing that was like, why is my address on here? And then she eventually makes it there, and her guard is part of the resistance, and then she right. finds out her dad was part of the resistance, which is why the king wanted him killed. And so then she joins it, right? Because they're ordinaries and the fatals and all of that. And so their whole big thing is at the last trial, she has to find a way to get them in, which she does. Kit takes her through the tunnels. And so they come in. And then at the end is the big brawl. And we know all of the resistance members that we knew were there. And
that they didn't fare very well.
No, because Kai was training with his dad's silencer to, because Kai's power is that he can take everybody else's power. That's his gift. And so he was training with the silencer to beat it and then take that over, which is what ends up happening and why they get the upper hand over the resistance.
Yeah, so I think they pretty much slaughter the majority of the resistance that is present.
So you have to think somebody survived long enough. No, I don't know. No, because they find out he pieces it together himself that she's part of the resistance. Because he's like, oh, yeah, why aren't they grabbing a hold of her? So, because I was going to say, somebody has to live long enough to tell them that Peyton's part of it. But I think they figured that out on their own.
They figured out. Well, Kit knows because that's how the resistance got in.
Yeah, that's true.
They know.
Yeah.
They know.
So, yeah, I don't know who lived. Be curious to see that.
So are you gonna read the next book?
Probably. I don't know when, but I'll probably read it when the third one comes out, so it's final, so I can just go right through.
Right.
But
My new thing is if I'm gonna do YA, I'm gonna do an audiobook so that I don't have to pay as
yeah.
much attention. That's like an I don't think I'm gonna read the next one, but if I were to do it, I would do an audiobook.
Yeah, that's fair. I did this audio and physical. I kind of tandem, but mostly on audio. And I actually didn't mind the narrators. I thought they were fine, which I've had trouble with some of the narrators recently.
I didn't have any trouble with the narrators.
Yeah. Okay, well, that is our review of Powerless. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Don't forget to join us next week for our review of Fear the Flames, or as Nikki likes to say, Gear of Flames by
Gear of the Flames.
Gear of the Flames by Olivia Rose Darling. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media platforms at For the Shelf Podcast. Give us a like, a comment, a review, anything. We want some interaction from you
Yes,
guys.
tell us what you think. Tell us what you want us to read.
Yeah.
Let's talk. Let's be book besties.
All right, guys, we will see you next week.
See you next week.